Jesus Heart. It's Dominic Steele here, and Jesus is off to the beach. We're talking today the ministry of Jesus in coastside suburbs. Rich Wendon is our guest. He's the senior minister of Seaforth Anglican Church and has just completed a Doctor of Ministry project on the challenges of mission and ministry in coastal suburbs. He's been senior minister of Cronulla Anglican in Sydney South for 10 years, then last year moved up to Seaforth, Sydney's northern beaches. Rich, I want to start with your pastor's heart, but first, you haven't come in a T-shirt and with a board shorts.
No. I tossed up wearing the patrol uniform, but I thought that might be
good. You are a beach patroller?
Yes. So I'm a member at Queenscliff Surf Lifesaving Club, and I patrol probably once a month.
And tell us about your board.
I have a racing board, so I compete in some carnivals. I went to the Australian Championships last year in the Masters with the Masters, and also state titles before that. So it's a bit of fun.
And so you've had a long-term pastor's heart for beach culture.
I have. It's funny, you know, I grew up doing surf lifesaving as a school sport. But then ministry took us to other parts of Sydney. And it was only when I ended up at Cronulla, and the opportunity came to join Surf Lifesaving Club there, because I'd been a member at Long Reef and then Freshwater after school. I jumped at the opportunity to join there, and being also the minister at the church, and just trying to think through how to reach the suburb, it became clear that it was a very different place. The beach, there's all sorts of distractions and competing ideologies, I guess, when it comes to reaching people. And so I just had this real, and I still have this real heart to work out how to tap into that culture. I mean, one of the things that struck me early on was, for a lot of people, the beach is, and all that goes with that in terms of the lifestyle and even just sport around there, is that it's people's heaven in many ways.
Well, that's one of the lines that I was thinking of as I was reading your Doctor of Ministry project, that, I mean, this is me from an outsider's perspective, thinking it's hard to long for heaven when it feels like I live there.
Yeah.
You kind of called it affluence, but it's also just, it's the aesthetic of the environment.
It is, and it's the hedonism as well of the environment. So, can I tell you a story?
Yeah.
I was one afternoon at Cronulla Surf Lifesaving Club, just having drinks with some of the guys, and I was talking to one guy who was retired, and I've been exploring the idea of thankfulness, trying to work through that one in terms of the whole hedonism thing. And he was, you know, talking about how great his life had been, and we're standing on the balcony of the surf club, we're looking across Bait Bay, so it's just, you know, just
beautiful.
Glorious, you know, it's a glorious Sunday afternoon. I mean, the tagline, and I don't know if you saw this in the project, but the tagline of the president of the surf club at the time, who was one of the guys I interviewed, was he would always sign off his president's message in the newsletter with, see you on the beach, where else would you rather be?
That's such a powerful line, would you rather be?
Yeah, it was a powerful line. Anyway, I'm talking to this guy, and he's just talking about his life, and he was retired. And he had a family and he's got it all set up. He's just enjoying life. And I said, who are you thankful to for all of this? And he said, and he just didn't even hesitate. And he just said, me, thankful to me. and we sort of tossed that around a bit more, but that was just an extraordinary line, I thought, because it just got right to the heart of what I think for many people, what they're, you know, they've built up this life down there. They've got it all. They've got the nice house. They've either been able to put their kids through school, or their kids are going through school. They've done a good rebuild. If they've renovated, and for many of them, they're at this was a particular focus. I mean, they're at the surf club a lot. The Surf Lifesaving Club a lot, because that's their church almost. In fact, there was a bit of banter on the because I'm still a member of Cronulla Surf Lifesaving Club. You can mm-hmm. be a member of two clubs. And there was a bit of banter on the Masters page the other day because there was a competition. There was a carnival on Saturday that I took part in, and one of the girls said, "Oh, we'll pray for good weather for you. We want to pray for good weather," just as a throwaway line. And then the guy who was my patrol captain said, "Oh, well, you know, we go to our church every Sunday, so it should be all right," as in talking about the surf club. And it's just that, it's all that. And I touch upon this in my thesis.
I want to get to that, the liturgy of the surf.
There's just this liturgy that's attached to everything to do with the surf. You know, one guy described it as the blue-green cathedral to me. I remember on all sorts of conversations that I'd have on patrol with the guys and girls would often, you know, center around that kind of spirituality.
Just going back to that conversation with that bloke on the balcony, and I mean, that feels to me like the kind of conversation that you replay in your mind over and over and think, what if I'd said this and how could I have taken that? And have you thought about that?
Yeah, I mean, the interesting one with that is that it got quite deep quite quickly because
what did you say? Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, I'm trying to remember. It's a while ago now. But I said, well, don't you think there's someone else that we ought to be thankful to for this? And that was when it got into talking about God, because he was very interestingly more atheistic than a lot of the other people in the club. In fact, he got quite antagonistic towards me at one point because he started talking about suffering and if there was a God, why does he, you know, let stuff happen to people? And then he referred to a guy in the club who was going through quite an intense battle with leukemia at the time. That's another story, actually.
Well, just one of the things that surprised me reading this is I had kind of the impression that everyone on the beach was a relaxed type person, whereas there's a range of different personalities and a range of different tribes. Mm. And so perhaps you could just unpack some of the different tribes and different subcultures that are the beach people.
Sure. I mean, you've got your, I guess what you could call them, what one pastor described to me as your relaxed coastal types, you know, who are just happy to live life to the full as they would describe it. You've got those who have who've worked very hard to be there, and who are enjoying the fruits of their labors, but then you've got those who are still working hard to be there as well. So we would come across when I was at Cronulla, and I haven't so much seen a lot of this at Seaforth because we've been locked down a lot in the last 12 months, but who were just really striving to be able to stay there. And so they'd mortgaged themselves to the hilt. They were working hard. They didn't have much time for anything else. And so that was their life, I guess. And we came across a number of families who were like that. And then people who are happy to give assent to some kind of belief. But when you ask them about, you know, when you press them further on what it meant for Jesus to be king or Jesus as Lord, they were like, oh, we don't really have the time to think about that that kind of thing. It was very interesting, though. You know, there is a spirituality, I reckon, like an underlying spirituality. In my project, I interviewed a range, as well as ministers, from up and down the coast of Sydney in the metro area. I interviewed a couple of local people as well. One of them was a local barista that I got to know very well in my time at Cronulla, and he owned a cafe, and the way he described his role, I guess, was super spiritual. He would talk about, you know, he almost talked about coffee as being the medium by which you know, he would listen to people and dispense advice. And it's like it was almost a worship kind of thing that was going on.
And actually, we're going to link to your project in the show notes of this thing for people who want to read further from you.
Yeah.
The Liturgy of the Beach, what's that?
Yeah, I came across an author by the name of James K.A. Smith, who some of your watchers, listeners may have heard of. He's very influenced by St. Augustine in a lot of his writings, and he wrote a series of books, one of which was called Desiring the Kingdom. But then he wrote one that I think was distilled into a fairly more manageable book called You Are What You Love.
Mm-hmm.
And in it, he talks about how, you know, over the time, and it's in the context of thinking about education, the education institutions in America, but he talks about how we've been conditioned along that Descartes, that Cartesian kind of line to you are what you think, you know, kind of thing. But he takes St. Augustine's line along the lines of our hearts are restless till they find their rest in thee, O Lord. And he talks about how actually deep down we're not so much thinkers on that Descartes line as we are lovers. And so we are what we love, and we worship all sorts of things, because deep down that's what we're like. And he explains that by way of what he calls secular liturgies.
Mm-hmm.
So the shopping mall, so your Westfield, for example, has a secular liturgy attached to it, because you go in and you're going in there to spend. The ultimate goal is to spend money. That's that's your act of worship, I guess. Similarly, the sports stadium has a liturgy attached to it. You go there to worship your team and even education.
Yeah, I was going to say, you could see that in pursuit of education, whether it's high schoolers or primary schoolers.
So he talks about in terms of secondary and tertiary, like particularly tertiary institutions. And as I read him, I thought, wow, you know what? I reckon that the microculture of suburban coastal contexts there's a liturgy attached to that, in terms of the worship of just the lifestyle, and just the when you immerse yourself in that culture, there's just that, as I said to you before, where would you rather be? In fact, I remember I was going for a swim down at the beach one morning, and it was a beautiful day, and I was just swimming next to another guy, and he said to me, doesn't get any better than this. And for a moment, I kind of thought, that's because, you know, the sun's glistening off the waves, and it's just the conditions are perfect. And for a moment, I thought, yeah, it doesn't get well, but actually, it does.
Yeah.
Actually, it does get a lot better than this. But there's the liturgy attached to that, you know. And as I talk about in my project, you watch it. I mean, I would sometimes sit on the steps or just along the esplanade, and you just watch people. You know, they head down to the water. They swim out to do the Shark Island swim, which is like a 2.5K swim around the point, Cronulla. It's the same down at Manly. So I'm at Seaforth, 6 minutes up the road from Manly Beach, and people do a similar swim that's called the Bold and the Beautiful every morning. And so there's a real kind of worship that's attached to that whole aspect of.
So what does a minister of Christ Jesus do to reach these lost hedonistic?
Yeah. So, I mean, some of this isn't rocket science in many ways, but I think there are a couple of things, and I talk about this in the project. I think one of them is working out how to tap into that reaching those people, tapping into that culture. And so, as I said, one of the things that I did was joining Cronulla Surf Lifesaving Club. Yeah. was
I
the
mean,
best
I,
thing.
I look at you doing that. I look at my friend Jody McNeil being bushfire brigade person down at Jamboree, and I see you doing the same things. Yeah. Really,
there are other options as well, but mm-hmm. I think that one was one of the best things I did because I was invited to become the chaplain mm-hmm. to the club, and that's not a big thing, but that's just we in sports chaplaincy we talk about being a presence. Mm-hmm. It's a ministry of presence. Like mm-hmm. you're not there to proselytize. You know, you're just there to build relationships with people mm-hmm. and so one of my encouragements and one of the things that came out of my research was that ministers and churches that are doing everything they can to tap into different aspects of the suburb, whether it be, chaplaincy in the surf club or even just joining the surf club mm-hmm. as a member, because the conversations that you get to have, mm-hmm. you know, as you get to know people are just amazing. And the opportunities are, it's a slow burn thing though, as well. Like it takes time to develop those relationships. It took 6 or 7 years to really get to the point where I was able to start having some deep conversations, invite people along to mm-hmm. church stuff. So that's one thing. I think also recognizing that that the communities surrounding things like sports clubs, surf lifesaving clubs, in some ways I think they put some churches to shame in terms of the way they just the time that they spend together. They don't just go down to do their patrol for the 4 hours and then go home, or they just don't go down to the Sunday mm-hmm. races and go home. You know, they're there and they're immersed and they're involved and it's their life. And it got me thinking a lot about community and mm-hmm. belonging. Mm-hmm. And my friend Stu Crawshaw from Soul Revival, who's done a lot of work on the kind of aspect of third place. Mm-hmm. Third places in ministry got me thinking about, because often one of the things
just for some people listening, what is third place?
There was a sociologist, Ray Oldenburg. He talked about first place is second place. First place is your home. Second place is people's place of work, and third place is the place where people hang out. So mm-hmm. you know, the pub, the cafe, sports clubs, you know, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. And what Stu has done really well, I think, at Soul Revival is that they've established a real kind of third place with their church. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got meals going. They've got a real sense of belonging. When it comes to the ministry that mm-hmm. happens there, because one of the things that often we've tried to do is we've looked at our church and we've thought, oh well, maybe people won't come to church, so we're going to establish something off mm-hmm. site, and some churches have tried to do that. In fact, they tried to do that down at I think it was one of the Pentecostal churches tried to do that down at Cronulla, mm-hmm. establish a church down on the beach. But it just,
I read about that in your project. It kind of felt like it didn't in the end work.
No, it didn't work, and I think it's because, again, there's all sorts of competing aspects to that and ideologies, but I think that we want to recognize that there's an aspect to our churches that we want people to come to us, and I think that the way you do that is by you know, not necessarily replicating what's going on there, but building a true community around the Lord Jesus, mm-hmm. around what unites us as Christians, but also building other aspects of real belonging into that.
Mm. Now, I want to talk about some strategies to do that in a minute, but can you just talk to me about this issue of nippers? And because I mean, that was just reading the project, that was a big thing that came through. I had not realized though it almost failed in the 60s until I read your project.
It did almost fail, and it did almost go under, and then they managed to revive it. They managed to I guess build it up again to the point where, and I think I say this, we had so there are four surf lifesaving clubs in in the parish of Cronulla, mm-hmm. there would be 1,500 kids descending upon those four surf clubs mm-hmm. across a Sunday, mm. which is huge. Mm. And it's
So if you want to be a church that reaches families on the beach, somehow you've got to have a strategy to engage in one way or another with that.
And I think so. There are a few churches that have. And this was one of this. In fact, I remember. A senior figure in Sydney in the diocese saying to me before I went to Cronulla that was going to be one of the
big
that
issues.
Was always and has always been one of the big issues for mm-hmm. for churches.
So what do you do?
Well, so
I mean, you've interviewed a number of ministers. Yeah. They've all had different strategies.
Yeah.
And in your project, it was clear that some of the strategies were working and some of them weren't.
Yeah.
What works?
What works is realizing firstly that mornings may not be the best time for some mm-hmm. for some places, but particularly mornings with that older group of nippers,
and so that's quite a big thing for a church to say, I'm not going to do Sunday morning church. I'm going to instead do
Sunday afternoon or Saturday night. But the thing is, and for it depends on resources. You see, we tried to we were low and limited on resources at Cronulla, and we tried a Sunday afternoon thing, but it meant actually closing our morning one and taking everyone into the afternoon. But it just didn't work for various reasons.
I mean, that sound when I was reading, this was what jumped out to me.
Yeah.
I thought, I mean, I've watched a number of churches start 4 p.m. services. Mm. Not particularly beachside ones, and I thought that's very interesting. And then some of them have closed, and I thought it was because they got half-committed people to minister to half-committed people, and whereas all the committed people were actually on Sunday morning. And,
yeah.
and so I thought maybe the strategy is to do what you did and put the committed people on Sunday afternoon, and so you've got a core to actually minister to the half-committed people, but it didn't work.
Well, it didn't quite work for us because we were very limited in our numbers mm-hmm. and as I said in our resources. But where I've seen it in talking
to a number of them, it did.
Yeah, it has worked, and I think it's a combination of things. It's again taking that long term patient view or patient approach to mm-hmm. things. So so part of it is perhaps if a church is in a position to be able to keep a morning family congregation going, but start something in the afternoon mm-hmm. that will tap into that, you know, that sphere. Mm-hmm. Then that's one thing you can do, or even I know one church is doing a 5 p.m. on a Saturday mm-hmm. Saturday night, which seems to be working.
And we are. I mean,
it's really difficult.
Let me push it.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
I like the idea of not taking that group on head on and working around and putting something on at a different time. But I'm just thinking about little kids wanting to go to bed and all that kind of issue.
Yeah, and that was our issue at the time as well, because my family was really young, and it was quite a struggle for us to do that. And so, I think it's, as I say, it's probably taking a longer term.
So maybe now your kids are older, maybe you could have pulled it off, do you think?
Or, yeah, I think we could have, because at Seaforth, we have two services at Seaforth. We have a 9 a.m. and we have a 4:45. Mm-hmm. And all our families are at our 4:45
really?
Service. But there were one or two who are at 9 a.m. because of the younger kid thing, so it doesn't quite work for them. But
you've got a significant kids ministry and teenage ministry at 4:45.
At 4:45, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And that was started by my predecessor about four or five years ago.
And are you picking up some of those surfy type people from the morning?
Not yet. Oh, not yet.
Oh, it's early days.
It's early days. We're still.
But it sounds like the strategy's right.
I think it is right, and I think it's right because it. Now, it's not going to suit. It not necessarily will suit absolutely everyone, but what I'm seeing is, and because we've picked up new families in the last year, either who've moved back from overseas because of COVID, or mm-hmm. or just families that we've met, and we've picked them up, and the consistent refrain has been, this is a good time for us for our families, because we do dinner once a month, and so if you church at 4:45, finish by around 6, dinner for half an hour, and then they can go home and everyone can go to bed, get ready.
Let's just put a shout out for the comments field, and it would just be great if people could let us know in the comments of experience with 4 p.m. services and how that works for families and has that worked. It'd just be just good to hear some other people's stories there. Can I just jump in on you interviewed a whole lot of rectors and as senior ministers, and as I read them through, I thought, there's just a few quotes I'd like to up to you. One of the things that came up in beachside suburbs was non-committal culture. Do you know what I mean? And I think lots of us all over the place would say we've got non-commitment issues, but you're kind of identifying special problems on the beach. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I remember that came up in a couple of the interviews I had, and I think it goes back to the relaxed coastal vibe that mm-hmm. seems to permeate mm-hmm. Some of these.
How does a church move to change that? What strategies did you come across?
Yeah, that's a struggle. Mm-hmm. I didn't come across heaps of strategies.
One of them was this DNA smaller group strategy. I didn't quite get from you whether or not you thought that was a good idea or not, but I thought it was interesting. Could you tell us what it was?
So one church had to try and counter this lower commitment factor had established these smaller, what they called DNA groups, not where they would there'd be three or four people who'd get together. They'd work out a time where they could do it. It wouldn't be long, so it wouldn't be like your normal kind of 1.5 to 2 hour growth group. It might be just like an hour to get together and pray. And I think and there would still be some Bible input there, but it was very much kind of based around life's lifestyle, life, work, that kind of thing.
What I thought was,
and I didn't sort of talk much about that. I was more just flagging that as one approach. One of the things that I push towards the end in terms of the strategies is I think that we as churches need to be stronger on our discipleship.
How does that play out on the beach or at the beach culture? Yeah.
Well, I think I think part of it is for our families who are already who might have a presence at the beach in surf lifesaving clubs, or even our families who are in sporting clubs. I think we want to try to build into them and disciple them and help them to see that that yes, it's good to have a relaxed kind of mm-hmm. It's good to be relaxed, and certainly I think one of the things that COVID has taught us, isn't it, that we do need to slow down, even though mm-hmm. it seems like things are speeding up a bit. But I think we want to see our Christian families and our parents particularly being built up and stronger in mm-hmm. the faith, so that they're able to nurture and nourish and build up their kids as well, and find those opportunities to to talk to their friends and to have those simple conversations. And I think that's also one of the things that I discovered. One of the things that I found was looking for those small opportunities to just drop those kind of gospel bites into conversation. That's not an easy thing to do. And so one of the things that I'm keen to help my people learn is how do we do that? Mm. How do we how do we speak the gospel in a casual way into the conversations that we're going to have when just pithy statements are made by people, in whatever sphere of influence, where would you rather be thing, the blue green cathedral kind of, we'll pray for, we better pray for good weather.
Thanks so much for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having me, Dominic.
Yeah, my guest privilege. On the Pastor's Heart, Rich Wendon. And look, I found it really stimulating reading Richard's project, and particularly hearing from six or eight different ministers from coastal towns on their different evangelistic strategies. I found it encouraging. Seeing the different initiatives that were taking place, and then, I'm not in the beach area, but then doing the translation. Well, if that's the principle there, how might that translate to my context? And so let me encourage you to read Rich's Doctor of Ministry project, and we will link to that in the show notes on the main Pastor's Heart page. Thanks for joining us, and we'll look forward to your company next week on the Pastor's Heart. Hey, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, we would love it if you could hop over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating and review. That helps us in the rankings and lets other people discover the Pastor's Heart. And again, if you are able to help us out by being a financial partner, go to our Patreon link, patreon.com/thepastorsheart.